Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now here's the show.
To continue to supply them is to make us essentially complicit in the strategy Israel is employing.
Eight senators call out Israel for blocking aid to Gaza. We'll hear from one of them. It's Wednesday, March 13th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, we'll hear how Kenya is getting almost all of its electricity from renewable sources, and the biggest chunk of that from geothermal power. Also, the former president of Honduras is sitting in jail in New York after being found guilty of drug trafficking and weapons charges. But Juan Orlando Hernandez was an ally of three American presidents. Well, he was taking bribes from drug lords.
It raises many questions because Hernandez was able to sell himself very easily as a drug war hawk, and the U.S. was very happy to promote him with that image.
But first, relief agencies are warning of a worsening humanitarian and hunger crisis in Gaza as Israel continues to restrict the flow of aid. Some senators are calling on President Biden to stop sending Israel bombs and other weapons, at least until they stop, quote, interfering with U.S. humanitarian assistance. Senator Jeff Merkley is one of them. He's a Democrat of Oregon, and he spoke earlier to Scott Tong.
The letter you've co-signed argues that giving arms to Israel violates American law because Israel is blocking humanitarian aid. What is the best evidence that Israel is actually doing this?
Yes, actually, 620I of our Foreign Assistance Act says that any country that restricts directly or indirectly aid cannot be provided with American assistance. And the evidence is multiple. Senator Van Hollen and I went to Rafah Gate, and what Israel set up was a highly restrictive process that made it very difficult to get aid approved to be put in through Rafah Gate or through any other gate, and then made it very difficult for it to be delivered once it was inside Gaza, because that requires deconfliction with military activities.
Is it some of the paperwork on the front end, not even kind of allowing processes to go through, or is it physically checking trucks?
It is both paperwork and it's the physical inspection process. All the aid agencies have asked Israel to set up a very clear pre-clearance process so that everything on a truck has been pre-cleared in advance. The failure to do that means all the pre-clearance is informal, but then it's not official. So then you go to Nitsana and you're inspected by an officer, and an officer says, I'm sorry, but I think that this birth delivery kit might be dual purpose because it has a knife in it, so we're rejecting that. And by the way, if we reject one thing, we reject the entire truck. So lack of pre-clearance process, inspections that are erratic and inconsistent. So it is on every level, but it fulfills a vision. There is a strong sense in Israel that, look, yes, Hamas is the enemy, but they're hosted by all the Palestinians in Gaza, so we're not going to let in this aid as long as hostages are held. And believe you me, I am vastly supportive of Israel going after Hamas, but starvation is not a legitimate strategy. It is, in fact, under international law, a war crime.
Israel's response to some of these, as you know, is that aid is not holding up aid. It has blamed the UN agency UNRWA for UNRWA's logistical problems. And Israel's view, and the Prime Minister Netanyahu has said, quote, Hamas is coming at gunpoint and stealing the food. Are those concerns you share?
They are not accurate. And we've had international journalists look at these questions and see that it is Israel that's providing the admittance of the trucks. Furthermore, mm-hmm. we have asked for official paperwork from Israel and from our agencies, our intelligence agencies. Is Hamas holding up these trucks? The answer is always, apart from one particular incident on one day, the answer is no. Hamas is not in a position to be able to organize and intercept trucks and take the food. That is not what's going on.
Senator, you, of course, know the politics of support for Israel in the Congress. This is a letter signed by a number of Democratic senators. But realistically, what do you expect this to change? What can this actually do?
It's designed to say to President Biden, look, you need to act more boldly. The humanitarian circumstances in Gaza are the worst in the world. And so use the tools you have. You simply say to Netanyahu, American law does not allow us to provide aid to you until you get humanitarian aid in. We've also implicitly recognized the restriction by proceeding to airdrop supplies. We could be doing more. We could be airlifting medical supplies into the remaining hospitals. That can be done by air. You can't drop enough food by air. But medicine to the hospitals, that's a significant amount of help.
Senator, any response from the White House since your letter went out on the legal question that what's happening now is a violation of the law, the request to stop military offensive aid?
The State Department has said, well, we want to look at words like the word otherwise. A country prohibits or otherwise restricts directly or indirectly. The word otherwise maybe implies it has to be an all-out prohibition. The State Department is basically saying they don't want to execute this law. So the response is our government is dodging the issue of complying with 620i.
Senator, finally, 5 months into this war, we have all seen images of Palestinian parents holding their dead children wrapped in white sheets, children on the cusp of starvation with their protruding hip bones. You were at Rafahgate. You were close to this humanitarian emergency. What can you tell us about the urgency of this, or perhaps people you met directly?
Well, first, let me restate the horror of the Hamas attack on Israeli villages. Completely supported Israel going after Hamas, but not in an indiscriminate manner, not using starvation as a strategy of war, not a calamity that produces 30,000 deaths and 60,000 injuries. And every one of those pictures should say to us, America cannot be complicit in this.
Senator, Jeff Merkley is a Democrat from Oregon. Senator, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Coming up next, the U.S. supported the former president of Honduras for years, but prosecuted him for drug trafficking just after he left office. His trial concluded last week, but his conviction leaves a lot unanswered about the future for Hondurans, as well as what role America played in facilitating his corruption. More after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why accessibility is central to Betterment's mission.
The real innovation for Betterment was taking a set of tools that were used by the ultra wealthy and making them accessible to the average investor. And that includes tax strategies, that includes dollar cost averaging. These are all sort of tricks of the trade.
Learn more about automated investing technology at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
the former president of Honduras is facing life in prison now that he's been convicted of drug trafficking. Prosecutors said Juan Orlando Hernandez paved a cocaine superhighway to the United States. But before he was arrested in 2022, Hernandez was an ally to three American presidents. And now his wife has announced her own run for office. Journalist Jared Olson was in the courtroom last week, and he spoke to Deepa Fernandez from Mexico City.
This is a huge downfall for a man that many thought was above the law. He and his brother enabling the flow of drugs and weapons. But now a Manhattan court has held him accountable. How is this rippling in Honduras, Jared? I imagine it's big news.
Yeah, so it's produced celebrations in certain sectors of society, and a lot of people are happy to see this guy who so very clearly during his mandate not just worked with drug traffickers, but also sacked so many public resources and promoted so many violent state bodies, militarized state bodies. And he very likely stole the second presidency that he won, quote unquote. But now we know from this trial, additionally, that he took millions and millions of dollars in donations from drug traffickers for his first 2013 presidency. So a lot of people, you know, are very happy to see him, you know, get thrown in jail for, you know, what looks like potentially two illegitimate presidencies. But the problems of extortion and violence still continue in Honduras, so that celebration is a little bit bittersweet.
So the scope of the illegal activities a former president engaged in is just breathtaking. Can you give us a thumbnail of what he did to enable the flow of drugs and guns and gangs and killings?
Yeah, so essentially what we learned from the testimony in the trial, which came mostly from imprisoned former drug traffickers who alleged to have been protected by the president, is that the president made the rounds going to different local drug clans, offering them protection, offering the state security forces to protect their drug trafficking operations in exchange for donations for his political campaigns. So he and his brother, according to these testimonies, were getting very wealthy, funding political campaigns, while very blatantly having the state and state security forces protect drug trafficking operations moving cocaine through Honduras.
Now, during all of this happening, Jared, he was seen as an ally by multiple U.S. presidents. Historian Dana Frank reminded us that these successive U.S. administrations provided Hernandez with weapons and training and funding, all in the name of the drug wars.
You know, the State Department, the White House, and the Southern U.S. Southern Command supported Juan Orlando all through his terms. They helped him. They legitimated his bogus elections. They supported him with military aid.
Jared, how much would U.S. authorities have known in real time about former President Hernandez's collusion with drug lords as it happened?
So this is a question that still needs to be addressed, you know, by investigative journalists and then historians in the future. We know from the trial now, or we can be led to suspect from the trial, that as early as 2014, while Hernandez was still seen as kind of a golden boy of U.S.-sponsored drug war initiatives in Latin America in the region, that Hernandez and his clique of high-level military members and politicians were being investigated by undercover informants for the DEA, according to former drug traffickers that Hernandez worked with and who testified against him in the trial. So this raises many questions. It's not clear, and this needs to be further investigated by journalists, but if DEA informants were already encircling these men in early 2014, as one testimony suggested, that means that almost 8 years passed before they finally decided to arrest Hernandez, and that was after what was considered to be a blatantly illegal, fraudulent second election. It raises many questions because Hernandez was able to sell himself very easily as a drug war hawk, and the U.S. was very happy to promote him with that image.
When in fact it was quite the opposite. Honduras is a country devastated by drugs and weapons and gangs. Now Honduras has a new president. How does the country build back after this corruption at the very highest level? And I'm wondering, Jared, is this connected to why so many people are leaving Honduras for the U.S. and arriving at the border?
Yeah, so the problem is still immense. In the courtroom, many of the former drug traffickers who were testifying, a question that kind of wasn't pushed by either the prosecutors or the defense, was the fact that every former drug trafficker said they were protected by military, police, and prosecutors in Honduras, right? Systematically, across the board, every one of them said that, right? And that's because it's an entire system of the state and members of the state allowing drug traffickers, you know, scraping off their profits, using them, operationalizing them. And that continues in Honduras, which is part of why, for example, extortion, you know, gangs on the street, oftentimes connected to more corrupt political officials, keep extorting people for exorbitant prices and then killing them if they don't pay up, right? So you have everyday insecurity on the streets connected to these wider corrupt networks, including members of the state, and those haven't gone away. You've got one severed head of a sort of mafia, as people see it, that's been cut off. But that mafia is kind of a hydra, so you cut off one and there's two left after that. So everyday life for Hondurans is still difficult.
So, Jared, now Hernandez's wife has announced she's running for president next year. What is the immediate future, given that the former president is now guilty of drug trafficking?
Well, in one sense, not much changes, because there are still corrupt elements of the state in Honduras, and particularly through the military, but many other elements that protect the drug trade. So the daily reality of insecurity and violence that many poor residents of Honduras live through continues. It's unclear, but now we know that Hernandez's wife, after pushing a large media campaign saying that Juan Orlando was innocent, is pushing herself as a candidate for the presidency, and we'll see what happens from there.
Journalist Jared Olson was in the courtroom as former president of Honduras was found guilty of drug trafficking and weapons charges on Friday. Jared, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, Deepa has the story of how Kenya overhauled its energy economy by tapping into the power of the earth itself. Steam heat after the break.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why accessibility is central to Betterment's mission.
The real innovation for Betterment was taking a set of tools that were used by the ultra wealthy and making them accessible to the average investor. And that includes tax strategies, that includes dollar cost averaging. These are all sort of tricks of the trade.
Learn more about automated investing technology at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com.
This message comes from Schwab. With Schwab investing themes, it's easy to invest in ideas you believe in, like online music and videos, artificial intelligence, electric vehicles, and more. Schwab's research uncovers emerging trends, then their technology curates relevant stocks into over 40 themes to choose from. Schwab investing themes is not intended to be investment advice or a recommendation of any stock or investment strategy. Visit schwab.com/thematic investing.
From crisis comes opportunity. In the 1970s, tensions flaring in the Middle East led to an oil embargo and drove up costs. That's what pushed Kenya to embrace geothermal power as an alternative to fossil fuels. Now the African country is well on its way to a goal of running on 100% renewables by 2030. Peter Muiruri is a freelance journalist based in Nairobi, Kenya, who frequently writes for The Guardian, covering climate change and conservation. Peter, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much.
Peter, start by explaining to us what geothermal power is and how it works.
Geothermal power is generated from under the ground. Maybe if you can start how this power gets to the ground. The Rift Valley, which originates somewhere around the Jordan all the way to Mozambique, runs through Kenya. Now, we know how the Rift Valley was formed was when the two tectonic plates pulled apart and the land between the two fault lines sank, bringing hot magma closer to the surface. That's about 25 million years ago. Now, when this water comes into contact with the hot rocks or the lava, it's always looking for a way to escape. And so this is the steam that the Kenya government has been tapping for some years now to drive the turbines that generate electricity in Kenya.
So let me ask you, Peter, it's steam, and this is obviously incredibly hot. How is the Kenyan government tapping this steam, and are there any safety issue involved?
The temperatures of this steam are up to 300 degrees Celsius. I don't think any human being would like to be close. Kenya is able to sink wells up to 3 kilometers deep, where they tap this power that is then transported through high-pressure pipes into the generator houses, where now it drives these turbines.
So I want to ask you, you know, today we hear a lot of governments saying they want to get to this place of being 100% renewable, where the energy their people use comes from 100% renewable sources. And Kenya seems pretty close to this goal. Can you tell us about that transition in Kenya to being fully renewable by 2030?
Right now, Kenya is running on 91% energy from renewables. We have 47%, which is geothermal, which we are talking about now. We have 30% hydro, because we have got some several dams that produce hydroelectricity. Then we have 12% wind power. The largest wind power in Africa is in Kenya. And then we have 2% of solar energy. So it is not difficult to transition to 100% if currently we are at 91%.
And is the steam that you're talking about that's created by this magma under the ground, is that a long-term possible climate solution to keep tapping that?
Remember what happens when steam cools. It turns into water again. Now, this water is recycled back into the wells where it can be heated even some more to produce more steam to drive the turbines.
Why are other countries not doing this, and could they learn from Kenya or take advantage?
Well, let's remember this, that of course there are high capital costs. Most African governments, especially in the global south, have to balance their citizens' needs such as food, housing, with such exploration and exploitation of geothermal.
I wonder if you can finish for us, Peter, by telling us what this means for Kenya. Now that it's so close to being at 100% renewables, how does this impact people there in everyday life? Is energy costs, is that cheaper for people? Is it more secure forms of energy for them?
Yes, in fact, it will have a twofold effect, which will be beneficial to the people of Kenya. Number one, as you rightly mentioned, the cost of power will come down because currently, remember, there is quite a mix of power production, including expensive generators, which are now being phased out, which use oil. Of course, we know oil is a polluter, so Kenya is trying to get rid of such expensive diesel-powered power producers. Number two, it will help the environment because, again, Kenya will rely less on hydroelectricity, which is affected by drought. Remember, Kenya just came out of 4 years of drought last year in 2023. That meant that the dams that produce power were at their lowest for 4 years. Well, why? Because of climate change. So now, with less water being exploited for hydropower, pardon me, that means that that hole will be plugged by more and more geothermal power being exploited. So even for the environment, obviously going 100% renewables is a win-win for the environment.
Peter Moiruri is a freelance journalist based in Nairobi, Kenya, who covers climate change and conservation. Peter, thank you.
Thank you again for having me in the studio.
That's our show. Here and Now Anytime comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Jill Ryan, Gabrielle Healy, and Ashley Locke. Today's editors were Todd Munt, Ahmad Daman, Chico Theuri, Micaela Rodriguez, and Kat Welch. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto, Caleb Green, and Michaela Varela. Mike Moschetto also wrote our theme music, along with Max Liebman and me, Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin, and the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back with you tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. No deep thinking here. Planet Oat oat milk is rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. Visit planetoat.com for more.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as the Black experience, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.